The following is intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
I am so excited about today's podcast because one of our guests is Kit Furterer, and Kit works for Holo Holo Charters. Holo Holo Charter operates on Kauai, the island of Kauai in the state of Hawaii, and one of the things that they do is take people up the Nepali coast, which is one of the most beautiful coastlines in the world. And it's really, there's only two ways to see this coastline. One is to walk on the hiking trail, which is somewhat dangerous, and a lot of people don't want to do that. And other, the other way is to take a charter boat up along the coast. And when you do that, you see beaches that you can only get to either by hiking to or by getting on the charter boats or your own boat if you have one. You see lava tubes, you see waterfalls. It really is just an amazing place. But what Holo Holo Charter does that nobody else does, it also goes to the coastline of the island of Niihau. Now, you may have never heard of the island of Niihau. And to me, I have been fascinated with this island since I was a boy because this Hawaiian island, part of the state of Hawaii, is called the Forbidden Island. Why? Well, very interesting. It is privately owned, and the family that owns this allow the folks that live on the island to live in the way that the native Hawaiians live. Their lives are very uncomplicated. They fish and they farm. They have very few, if any, modern luxuries, and very few visitors. You really can't go to the island unless you're invited, and very few people have been invited to the island. And Kit himself knows a thing or two about the folks on Niihau, having worked with them. He's never even been to the island himself, but he knows more than anybody I've ever met. And as someone who is fascinated by the island of Niihau, I had invited him to be on the podcast today. Also on the podcast is a guy by the name of Chuck Price. And I met Chuck about a year ago. He's known as a finance doctor. And I've asked him on the podcast for a specific reason. I'm not going to get into a bunch of, you know, financial stuff on how you need to plan for your retirement and stuff. But I know a lot of people who are listening to this podcast want to retire and travel. My parents did that. And Chuck is very plain speaking. He didn't pay to be on the program. And we're not talking about what you need to invest in or any of that kind of stuff. But we're talking about mindset. I've never heard anybody discuss the mindset that you need to have when you're thinking about retiring and traveling. And you need to hear this. Even if you're in your 20s right now and you're a traveler and you love to travel and you're thinking, boy, I want to travel my whole life. When you get into your golden age, it's going to change. And the stuff that he told me, I didn't even consider. And I said, man, I'd really like to have you on the podcast just to discuss this. We're going to have him for a few minutes. But before we get to all that, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the Space Needle and how much I love the Space Needle. And I admit, if there's a large place to go to the top of to look out, I'm going up there. And so I thought we would spend a few moments today on the podcast reviewing some of the other great places in the world that have great observation decks. Now, we also have already talked about the Space Needle, and we have talked about the Tower of the Americas in San Antonio. We need to talk about two of the greatest places in the world, two of probably the most... One is the most visited place in the world. That's the Eiffel Tower. We'll talk about that in a moment. And the other is the Empire State Building in New York City. And I actually have a blog post on the Empire State Building titled, Is It Worth It to Visit the Empire State Building? And I would say, in my opinion, if you're going to New York City, there's actually multiple observation decks. There's one at the World Trade Center, which I have not been up to yet. And there's one at Rockefeller Center. And there is the Empire State Building. It's iconic. It's very historic. It was for a very long time the world's tallest building. I went up there about 2 years ago for the first time, and I enjoyed it very much. I would suggest you go probably late in the afternoon because you could stay up there and watch the lights come on in Manhattan, the rest of New York City, and it's a very different view in the evening, early evening, as it is in the sunlight, so you get two for the price of one. It does take you a long time to get to the top of the Eiffel Tower. I mean, Empire State Building, because you have to go through a lot of different levels, and they have all these different things for you to go through and try to sell you stuff and security, and then all of a sudden, here's the mascot of the Empire State Building. Have any idea what the mascot is for the Empire State Building? Anybody? Anybody? Bueller? Yes, it's King Kong. Yes, they have a King Kong mascot. The reason I want to bring up the Empire State Building, reason number one, is there's two different levels to the observation deck.
Do not waste your time going to the very top level. There is just the regular level, which is more than fine. And then you can pay an extra price also if you want to go to the spire. Like I said, don't waste your time. Don't waste your money, because I paid for that. And I discovered when I went up to the spire up there, first of all, you got to take another elevator. And you've wasted about a half an hour just to get up to the top already with all the different stops that they have. So now you're in another line to get up to the very, very top. Well, it's the view is almost exactly the same, because, I mean, it'd be like, what is the view if you went up the top of a 20-foot ladder? Okay, what would the view be like if you went up one more inch? That's really what it's like when you go from the observation deck of the Empire State Building to that little extra floor to go to the spire. The view isn't going to be that much different because you're so high up there to begin with. Secondly, the spire up there is very, very small, and you're just crammed in this little teeny space looking out these very thick windows that were probably installed in the 30s when the Empire State Building was built. And I went up there and I thought this was a waste of my time and money, because I can't wait to get back down to the level below and see the view from there, because you can move around a bit and it's pretty much exactly the same. But I would like to point out, though, if you would like to go to the top of a tall building in New York City, perhaps you should consider Rockefeller Center instead of the Empire State Building. Now, if you want to go to the top of the Empire State Building to say that you've been there, I understand that. But in my opinion, the Rockefeller Center view is better than the Empire State Building for a couple of reasons. First, you're not taller, but you're facing in the direction north. You can see in all directions, but you can see Central Park from Rockefeller Center. You can't really see it from the Empire State Building, because guess what's in your way? Rockefeller Center. So that's why you want to go up to Rockefeller Center. Also, Rockefeller Center, you can actually go outside. The way they have it constructed, it's really thick walls. It's very, very safe. You won't feel scared at all up there. My daughter and I went up there. We absolutely loved it. You get a great view of Central Park. In fact, you can see all the way to Yankee Stadium. You can't see that from the Empire State Building. And you know what else you get to see in Rockefeller Center? That it makes a great picture that you don't get to see when you're in the Empire State Building. You get to see the Empire State Building, because obviously you can't see it if you're inside the Empire State Building. I thought the Rockefeller Center observation deck was a better experience. And also, what's really neat, too, is the elevator that you take to the top of Rockefeller Center. They've kind of constructed it's almost like a movie of sorts. When you're looking up the elevator shaft, it's open and there's different things being projected on the history of Rockefeller Center. So I thought the experience was much better. I believe it was less expensive, and it takes a lot less time to get to the top of Rockefeller Center than it does to get to the top of the Empire State Building, because at the Empire State Building, they have to go through all these different levels and so forth. So if you're in New York City and you just really want a great view and a great experience, I suggest Rockefeller Center. Now, across the ocean, we have the Eiffel Tower. And I will tell you right now, I love the Eiffel Tower. I could have spent the whole day in the Eiffel Tower. I studied French in high school and college, and I knew all about Paris before I got there. I've only been to Paris once, and I knew all about Paris when I went there, and it did not disappoint. It was more beautiful than I ever imagined. And the Eiffel Tower, to me, I felt a kinship with it. Is that weird? Can you feel a kinship with a building? But I couldn't wait to get up there, and when I got up there, it did not disappoint. There's multiple levels, and like the very first level, there's like a movie theater up there that you can see a little film about the construction of the Eiffel Tower. There's restaurants, there's gift shops. If you make it all the way to the top, and some people do not want to go all the way to the top. I've mentioned my wife is not very loving of heights, enamored with heights. She didn't want to go all the way to the top. My daughter and I went all the way to the top. The view is spectacular. But the interesting thing is, there's an apartment on the top of the Eiffel Tower that Gustave Eiffel, who built the Eiffel Tower, lived on the top of for a very long time. It's kind of interesting because it's a little cheesy, the apartment, because they have it decorated as it was back in the day, but they have like mannequins of Gustave Eiffel talking to Thomas Edison, who visited him on his apartment on top of the Eiffel Tower. Also cool at the top of the Eiffel Tower, they serve champagne. So make sure you take part in that. And the interesting thing about the Eiffel Tower is it's the most visited tourist attraction in the world. And probably nothing says Paris. If you show them the Eiffel Tower, anybody the Eiffel Tower picture of it, they immediately know Paris. But few people realize that it was built in 1889 for the World's Fair, that it was so universally hated by the Parisians that they demanded that to be torn down. And it was planned to be torn down, actually, a couple years after the World's Fair was over. In fact, if you ever read the short story, The Necklace by Guy de Maupassant, I hope I pronounced that right. It's a famous short story, and a lot of people read it in high school English. He was a famous French writer, and he had lunch every day at the foot of the Eiffel Tower. And he was asked one time, because he was a big opponent of the Eiffel Tower, he couldn't wait. He hated it. He just said it, thought it ruined the skyline. And someone asked him, if you hate it so much, why are you having lunch here every single day? And he said, because this is the only spot in Paris I can go where I don't have to look at it, because you can see it from everywhere. In fact, there's a height restriction on buildings in Paris, so nothing in the inner part of the city is anywhere near as tall as the Eiffel Tower now. Now it's obviously universally loved, but at the time it was supposed to be torn down. It's kind of interesting, too, when you think about it. At the time, there was nothing even close to the height of the Eiffel Tower. In fact, it surpassed what was then the largest structure, the tallest structure on the planet, which was the Washington Monument. If you've ever been to Washington, D.C., Washington Monument isn't really that tall. But at the time, that was the tallest structure in the whole world, and the Eiffel Tower far surpassed that. So if you think about that, you know, in its day, when it was built in the 1890s, what a shock it was to Paris. I mean, it was a city that went back for centuries of beautiful palaces. And, I mean, that's what the Louvre is, a palace. And I mean, there's beautiful churches. Then all of a sudden you build this modern structure that's probably 10 times as tall as anything that's already in Paris. You could understand the mindset at the time why people hated the Eiffel Tower. Now it's unimaginable that you would do anything like that to tear down the Eiffel Tower. It just wouldn't happen. But it, as I said before, it is probably the most iconic structure in the world. Now, if you are lucky enough someday to go to Paris and you do have some fear of heights, but you also want to see a great view of the city, might I suggest you skip the Eiffel Tower if you have a fear of heights. If not, I highly recommend you visit. But if you do have a fear of heights, I would recommend a trip to the Arc de Triomphe at the end of the Champs-Élysées, the famous shopping district in Paris, one of the most famous boulevards in the world. And at the end is a circular drive, or a traffic circle built by Napoleon, is the Arc de Triomphe. A lot of people don't realize that you can go to the top of that. And my wife loved it up there because she felt very, very safe. And as I said, there's height restrictions on the buildings in Paris. So the Arc de Triomphe is above most of the buildings in Paris, except for the Eiffel Tower. So you get a great view from there. The interesting thing, though, there's two things to point out about the Arc de Triomphe. First of all, do not try to cross that traffic circle. It is almost impossible. What you need to do is look for the underground passageways. They have tunnels that go underneath it, and you get to the plaza by going under these tunnels. Look for those. There's one on like every corner, so you can't miss it. But that's the way you get across. Do not try to cross it just by running across the street, because the traffic there is crazy. The other thing is, when you're on top of the Arc de Triomphe with this great view, you get to see something that you don't get to see when you're in the Eiffel Tower. You get to see the Eiffel Tower. It's just like being in Rockefeller Center. There is another observation tower that I'd like to also point out that I didn't even know about until I went to go visit Barcelona. And it's not so much the height and the great view, though there is a pretty decent view of the harbor. It's the Columbus Tower, which was built in 1888. And it's 197 feet tall. So that's about maybe about 15, 20 stories tall. But this thing is, I mean, the Eiffel Tower doesn't seem like it's over 115 years old. The Columbus Tower, to commemorate Columbus finding America, remember he got the money from the Queen of Spain? That looks like it is over 115 years old. But here's the amazing thing. There's an elevator in the middle of this teeny little tower. And I might say teeny, it's not that wide. And the elevator is very, very small. I have no idea when they built this elevator, because I don't know how they could have got a staircase up that tower. And I'm almost wondering if this elevator in the Columbus Tower in Barcelona is as old as the tower. Regardless, it is a great visit, the tower in Barcelona called the Columbus Tower, and it's down there on the coastline in Barcelona. So there's a kind of a review of a couple different vantage points that I have visited, and take it for what it is worth. All right, as I have promised, a visit to the forbidden island of Niihau on Hawaii. Kit Furterer is with Holo Holo Charters. And before we get to Kauai and Niihau and all that, first of all, can you give us a weather report? How perfect is the island of Kauai today?
Today it's about 75 degrees on the way down this morning. It is almost 9:15 a.m. And the surf is about medium. It's about 4 to 5 feet. We are expecting some bigger surf the next couple days, but our boats can fully handle and operate in these wonderful conditions.
Well, I called you, Kit. We met a couple of weeks ago, and I want to talk to you specifically about the island of Niihau, which is not very well known. But I want to start off by telling people about Kauai, which is known as the Garden Isle. And you guys at Holoholo Charters offer a very unique service where you follow the Nepali coast. And tell people what is so special about this part of Hawaii.
Well, Nepali coast is actually where the first Hawaiians lived and discovered. They lived across these 4,000-foot cliffs on secluded beaches, and they grew taro and actually traded with different parts of the Nepali coast. And the only way that you can get around the Nepali coast is by water or by hiking. And by hiking, it's actually known as one of the 10 most difficult hikes in the world. So the boat trips that we do, you really get a perspective from the water, and you get to see up these cliffs and see and think about how old Hawaii was and how the people that first discovered Hawaii lived. They would actually trade taro from the upper parts of the cathedral cliffs all the way down to fishing villages on the other side of the cliffs, and they would, you know, raise baskets and lower baskets.
And actually, Nepali means the cliffs or many cliffs in Hawaiian.
Correct, it does.
Yeah, and this is a 17-mile coastline, and like you said, there's only two ways to really see it. And hiking is, I've never hiked it. I've always wanted to hike it, but I understand, like, I mean, literally, if you're hiking it, some very narrow paths that go, I mean, could be a huge drop down into the ocean.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's part of the challenge of it is getting there, and that's part of the journey as well. So I'm sure that, it, you know, for some people, that's the way to see Kauai, and that's one of the most, you know, popular ways to do it. But a lot of people opt for the boat trip because it's so much easier. You can do it within a day, and you get to see it from that great perspective and still snorkel along the coast as well.
Now, also, you guys offer a trip across the channel to view what is known as the Forbidden Island. And I don't think a lot of people know about this island in Hawaii called Niihau. And tell everybody what is so... I'm fascinated by this island, by the way. Tell everybody what makes this island so different and so special.
So it is truly Hawaiian's Forbidden Island because only native Hawaiians that were born there can actually live there. And in other instances, visitors can't really actually visit the island unless you're invited in a special circumstance, or if you did one of the possible Robinson helicopter tours, which they do a very limited number of people that are allowed to go there. So this Hawaiian Forbidden Island was purchased around 1864 from the Robinson family, and they purchased it from King Kamehameha for about $10,000. Back then, that must have been a lot of money, because now that seems like a really great deal.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah.
The people there are so amazing and so beautiful because they still live and speak the native Hawaiian language of Aleo. Aleo is known as the original old Hawaiian language, whereas most Hawaiian that you hear today will be a modernized version of that language. So it's really neat to hear that old language preserved, because they didn't have any written history before. So everything is preserved through Aleo language and through song and dance, which is hula. And that is just an amazing thing to see from the people of Niihau as well.
And this island, too, correct me if I'm wrong, it's an island that, unlike most of the Hawaiian islands, does not get a lot of rainfall. Is that correct?
Correct. It gets, you know, a fraction of the amount of what Kauai gets. Kauai is actually has one of the wettest spots on the earth at Mount Waialae. But as you cross the channel, it's one of the driest spots on the earth. And where we actually snorkel is at Lehua Crater. And it's an old tuff cone volcano that has over 150 feet of visibility. And that, wow, visibility comes from the fact that there's no runoff and there's not a lot of rain that's produced there.
Now let's get back to the island of Niihau. So if you're to take a Holoholo charter, you actually go near the coast, but you don't actually get on the island, as you said, because it is you're not allowed unless you're invited or if you're you know, native Hawaiian. What is life, as best that you know, what is normal life like on a day-to-day basis for the people who live on this island?
So, yeah, we actually go pretty close to the shore, but we actually really want to respect the natives, and we respect the people and the way of their culture. So it's a really, really special place, and we're actually with the only boat tour company that goes there daily. So it shows you what type of respect that we have for the host environment and the people there and helping maintain that culture. You know, the people there are really holding old Hawaii still intact. Niihau was never conquered by King Kamehameha, and neither was Kauai, so it really has a special mana or spirit to it. And the people there are still living with those old ways. They, you know, for what they do for income is they actually collect a very, very rare shell called the Kehelani shell, and also other puka shells, which are turned into necklaces and adorn. And a lot of times this is the closest that people can get to actually being on Ni'ihau's, owning one of these rare pieces of jewelry. And it's really a process. The whole family gets involved. The kids are picking them out. The adults are sorting them. And then the aunties and uncles are all part of the process of stringing them. So that's their main source of income. For daily, day-to-day life, they do a lot of still fishing and farming. They're really known for their yams. When Captain Cook first discovered the island, they actually called it Yam Island because Ni'ihau was known for how great their sweet potatoes were. And they still do that today, as well as other types of ranching of lamb. And they even got into honey at one point. So they've done a couple other little things. But for the most part, they'll still fish the old way with fishing nets. And they still fish within the Hawaiian categories of what is actually acceptable to fish during certain seasons. They were truly ecologists because they knew that if they overfished a certain fish, then that fish may never return there, and then they may never be able to eat again. So they were able to, be through years and years and years of experience, know what needed to be done to live within their society and nature.
So this really is a lifestyle that's passed down from one generation to the next.
Correct. They do have a small school on the island, and actually it's run completely 100% on solar, but there's probably only 15 or 20 kids at that actual school. They do have another school on Kauai as well. So most of their knowledge, or also known as mana'o, is passed on through their grandmothers and their mothers, grandmothers known as tutu. So that information is really important, and it's really maintained through the song and dance, through honoring different deities and different gods, and also telling history and telling stories of what happened.
So you said that they have solar in the school. Do the people, are they live in some type of houses, or do they have any electricity or running water, or what is that like for their day-to-day life?
Yeah, there's a small village called Pu'uvai, and Pu'uvai is actually known as the heart. And right there in that town, there's actually an old kind of brick-laid concrete structures, and then they'll have hale roofs on top. There's no current running water or electricity. They do have one generator to the island, but it's very limited to when they're allowed to use that. The Robinson family really tries to keep things the way that they used to be so that the people experience it and help maintain that.
Are there any vehicles at all on the island? Do people walk from their homes to the fishing areas or to their farms? Is there any type of vehicles at all?
They mostly use horses still for the day. I know that the Robinson family does have a pretty neat craft of vehicles that they use to get around. I think maybe even a hovercraft or two, as well as some old-style military ones that they've been able to maintain.
And you were also telling me, too, that they do like come to Kauai from time to time and shop at Costco with the money that they make from the shell necklaces.
Yeah, you know, there are certain commodities that are needed still to survive, and, you know, there's no better place than Costco to get them. So they will get, you know, toothbrushes and certain types of foods that they can't get there. So there's still some modern influence of the modern world to the most remote places in the world. But for the most part, they're still living that old way, which I think is really beautiful.
I just wonder, I can't even imagine like what it would be like to live in a lifestyle that's passed down from generation to generation, that really is living off the land, and it's almost a utopian kind of way, but then come over to the modern world, which has handheld computers and all sorts of devices to interconnect with the rest of the world, and that to be so foreign to you today.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the challenges where technology lies, is that how do we bring up the past with the current, and how do we balance those things? And I think more and more people are starting to get away from technology and realizing that they need these real experiences, that they need to go out and see something that they've never seen before, or talk to somebody from a different place in the world where they've never spoken or seen someone like you. So that type of experience runs much deeper than the technology world can even grasp.
Yeah. Well, Kit Furterer, we really appreciate your time. Holoholo Charters on the island of Kauai, known as the Garden Isle. And as I mentioned in an earlier podcast, people are always asking me, hey, I want to go to Hawaii. What island should I go to? And I always say, well, what do you expect from your Hawaiian vacation? And if someone said, I'm thinking about, you know, going to Hawaii, what would be your sales pitch for the island of Kauai? Why would someone want to go to Kauai? I know the answer for myself why I would want to go there. But for someone who's never, can't really make a decision on what island they want to go to, why would they want to go to Kauai?
Well, Kauai is actually the oldest of the island, and as you said before, it is the Garden Island, so it's really lush. And since it's so old, the volcanic material has had time to break down and turn into this beautiful rainforest. Also, Kauai was the most isolated from the rest of the island, so it still has much of the old world feel. And we have, you know, that old Hawaii that you're looking for. We don't have the big lane highways like Oahu, and we don't have the mega structures in downtown of Waikiki. We actually have a rule where you can't build larger than the highest coconut tree. So most of our buildings are actually under three stories. And most of our, and we actually have the most white sand beaches in all of Hawaii. So if you're looking for that romantic, adventurous getaway, Hawaii has that. Kauai really has that.
Yeah, if you're looking also to hike, also not only the Napali Coast, but a canyon, Waimea Canyon, known as the Grand Canyon of Hawaii, there really is some really beautiful landscape and adventure on the island of Kauai, one of my favorite islands in the chain. And Kit, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for filling us in on the island of Niihau, which I've been fascinated with for years. It's one of those, I wouldn't say it's a bucket list item, because I know it probably is never going to happen, but the more that I can learn about the people, I really appreciate your time.
No problem. It's my pleasure. Aloha.
Speaking of the island of Kauai, I wish I would have asked Kit about this. I went to high school in Hawaii, and this was actually a place that you could visit at one time. If you've ever seen the movie South Pacific, even if you haven't seen the movie, you've probably seen the scene where the servicemen, the sailors from World War II, are frolicking with the women of the South Pacific, and they're kind of in a chute. There's a waterfall, and they're sliding down this chute into this lagoon. That actually is on a piece of private land on the island of Kauai, and for many, many years, the person who owned that property, I mean, it was on maps. You could go visit it. It would be like the scene from South Pacific is here. I'm going to post that on my blog, this, if I can find it, a picture or of the scene of that, so you know what I'm talking about. But that was on private property, and you could go visit. The guy, if you wanted to hike up to his land, you were welcome to go swim in that lagoon until, of course, someone slipped and fell, and you know the rest of the story, and now it's private property, and nobody gets to see that anymore. Well, this next guest, Chuck Price, he's the finance doctor, and I invited him on the show not to talk about saving up for retirement. There's plenty of places you can go for that, but I know that a lot of people want to retire and travel, and I wanted Chuck to come on the show because you have to have a certain mindset if you're going to do that, and something I was not prepared for. And I'm not even talking about the financial advice that he gave me for free, that you should only withdraw only 1.7% from your IRA. No, it's a mindset. We're talking a mindset that you need to have before you retire.
I'm going to tell you something here that no financial planner, your financial planner will go crazy when I talk about this on the radio. The reality of retirement is this, and I've been doing this 45 years. A lot of my clients were 50 years old, now are in their 90s. And, you know, they're going strong. But what I've seen happen in my practice, I see people, most people, they retire at 65 or 70, depending on, you know, what they're doing. And when they retire, they'll travel for maybe up to 75 to 80. But once they get about 80, most people, now some were exceptional, most people don't want to get on a plane. They don't want to drive 12 hours.
Yeah.
They don't want to travel. So you really have a short period of time that you're really going to travel. And what I tell people, listen, what we did is we traveled from 50 to into our 60s. We've been traveling. I tell clients, look, you've got to travel while you're healthy. Take the vacations. Don't be a workaholic. Take the vacations. Enjoy your life. Smell the roses.
Yeah.
You know, it's so true. If you travel while you're young, I could tell you story after story of clients of mine. I had a client that worked to 70. They took one cruise. He was coming out of a Safeway store here in Portland, and he fell over and had a massive heart attack and died before he hit the pavement. They had one trip. One frickin' trip. And so what I tell people is, look, you've got to understand, if you're saving money and you're putting money away, what you want to do is, while you're healthy and you're still working and you can travel, take those vacations and take that travel time. Build some experiences for your life. Because I've had too many clients get to their 60s. I have one of my clients who, they've got millions of dollars. They could travel anywhere. But one of them's got a foot problem and they can't walk. They didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
They got 65 and it happened.
Yeah.
Crap happens. You know, as we get older, more of it happens. So I tell people, you got to start traveling. And in reading about you, I see, Hawkeye, that you've done a lot of traveling. you are doing things exactly right. You need to travel while you're young and you're healthy, and you can go see those things and really get the enjoyment out of travel. And you're still putting money away for retirement, so you'll get to travel some more when you retire, but you'll have those memories that you did it when you were healthy, because I guarantee you, when you get into your 70s and you get to 80, my clients tell me they just don't want to travel.
You know, it's interesting, you know, you say take it, you know, you've got vacation time, take it. There's so many people who leave their vacation time on that they want to travel, but they leave it on the table. You know, that's part of your pay package. That's akin to telling your employer, hey, I got paid, $7,000 this month. I only spent $6,000. I'm going to send you back that $1,000. You would never think to do that, but that's what you're doing when you don't take your vacation days. You're giving them back. You're giving them back something that you earned.
Well, not only that, you're not rejuvenating your body and your mind.
Exactly.
You're not recharging yourself. I mean, you know, the just like our investments, your physical body needs to be recharged too. You gotta enjoy life along the way, and you gotta go take those experiences. And your body needs downtime to relax and rebuild up to do a better job.
Chuck, man. Okay. You're the most plain talking financial advisor I have ever heard, and I really appreciate your perspective.
Thank you.
I'm going to put some links on our podcast where you can find out more about Chuck, find out about his book and everything. Once again, Chuck didn't pay to be on the show. I just asked him to be here. And I just really wanted people to think a little bit about the mindset of retiring and traveling, because I hadn't really thought of it myself. And I, you know what? I see it now happening with my parents who retired early to travel. And they just got back from Bali. And my dad, who loves Bali, who's been there 5 times, said, that's probably going to be our last time to go. It's just so far, and it's getting harder to get there. So I know what he means when he says you need to travel young, and you just don't know what's going to happen. And Chuck, I don't invest with Chuck. I invest with some I'll just tell you, Fidelity, but because I am hoping to do some traveling when I retire too, my wife and I. But the advice that Chuck gave was very, very straightforward and simple and realistic. And so if you're looking for some advice, he's got a book out there. He's got a radio show. And I think he also gives personal attention if you would like that. But anyway, I really like Chuck a lot, and I like his mindset, so I wanted to have him on the podcast. Hey, special thanks to Kit Furter from Holo Holo Charters for all his information on the forbidden island of Niihau. And thank you for making us part of your podcast experience. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis. This is Travel with Hawkeye. Remember, your adventure awaits.